Welcome to the Immigrant Heart Show. Hello, and welcome to the Immigrant Heart Show. This is Cindy Gomez-Shemp, and today we will be talking about, dun-dun-dun, a possible Trump presidency. And with me, I have special in-house guest, Dr. Fauzia Haider. She's a board member with the Center for Interfaith Projects, and somebody that's been following this campaign very closely. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You've been on this show before, the Immigrant Heart Show.
Yeah, I like this radio station and the show as well.
And I really enjoyed the way in which you discussed politics. You've lived here for a long time. You are someone that considers themselves very much at home here, but you can relate to the way that immigrants and refugees are being talked about, particularly during this time of the campaigning period of Trump and a lot of other Republicans before him.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm a first-generation American, and I've lived here for 20 years, but I still have roots in Pakistan, and I still get to experience things. I am an American, but like as a new immigrant too. So I can relate to how the new immigrants feel when they come here. And so.
Well, we're going to be talking about specifically some of the differences that you may have noticed during the RNC and the DNC. They were very different conventions. We'll also talk about the comments that Khizr Khan made. I know I'm not saying it correctly. You can tell me how to say it correctly.
Khizr Khan, but you said it fine, you know.
Khizr Khan.
Yeah.
His statements to Trump and also the response from Trump and the allegations that Trump has made about Khan's family, as well as we'll talk about all of the different methods of hate speech that have been coming out of the GOP as well as out of Trump's mouth. And also the rumors, I don't know if you've heard them, that he might possibly be getting out of the race. We'll be covering all of that on today's Immigrant Heart Show. You're listening to 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. We're also broadcasting on Shoutcast, so if you can't catch the show on your radio, you can also listen online live at kpppfm.com. And, of course, we want to hear what you think of this topic and other topics that we've had on this show in the past. You can contact us by leaving us a message at 701-566-0917. You can follow us at media_PPP, or you can email me, Cindy, at kpppfm.com or Duke at kpppfm.com. Also, you can follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo-Moorhead, The People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can. So let's just dive in quickly to the discussion of the RNC versus the DNC. How were these two conventions different?
They couldn't be more different than each other, you know. Like, I've been following politics for quite a few years, you know. I followed Clinton's presidency, then Obama's election, Bush elections, you know, all those conventions. This RNC Republican convention was much more different than any other Republican conventions I've seen. First of all, none of the living ex-Republican presidents came to the convention. George Bush didn't come, and the senior George Bush didn't come. So Mitt Romney, he didn't come. It wasn't really a Republican convention. It was more like a Tea Party convention.
With Scott Baio.
Yeah, Scott Baio. And there were people that I didn't even know, recognize, you know, the celebrities, you know, they had their talking. I didn't even know most of them who they were. And they were mostly foaming at their mouth, spitting, talking about doom and gloom and the America that is not. They were talking about, almost made it sound like America is a failed state. And it wasn't patriotic, upward-looking, forward-looking, hopeful. It was just about doom, gloom, destruction. And Mitt Romney was there, and Chris Christie spoke. And the crowning glory was Trump's wife, Melania Trump, you know.
That was the crowning glory?
I mean, like, that was just like, I mean, for me, it was like funny. Like, I mean, she comes there and she delivers a speech, which is a copy of Michelle Obama's speech, ditto, word to word, you know.
Yeah.
And then she says that she wrote it herself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then in response, and if you contrast that with the Democratic convention, There's a comedian who does a show on HBO. No, Comedy Central. Mm-hmm. Larry Wilmore, I think, is his name.
Wilmore.
And he said that the Democrats had the best Republican convention ever because they were doing what usually Democrats do, you know, mm-hmm. Like cheerleaders of the country, patriotic, you know, and very hopeful. And so they took over the patriotism part, the Democrats, which usually the Republicans, you know, sort of think that they own it, you know. Mm-hmm. And the Democrats, great speeches, uplifting, hopeful, forward-looking, and good speeches. Michelle Obama, President Obama, Bill Clinton, Joe Biden, you know, and all the speakers, General Allen. And imagine general speaking at a Democratic convention, you know.
A whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
Like there was half of the Pentagon
was standing
on the stage.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what there was a picture of it, that the Pentagon, you know, half the Pentagon is here supporting the Democrats, you know.
It was almost surreal.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, honestly, I didn't watch much of the Republican convention. I couldn't do it. It was like eating poison. I tried to watch for a while and then I was like, nope, I'm making myself sick, and I had to stop. And to be honest, really honest, I did watch a little bit every day of the DNC. I did watch a little bit, but I can't say I watched the whole thing because it was almost like a sweet tooth. It was just like, oh, for Christ's sake, it's just too much rah-rah, zis, boom-bah. Everything is great. We're great. I don't know.
Yeah, it was just like, you know, like cheerleading, you know. And but there was also what other thing that came to my mind was that Trump's candidacy is the culmination of the Tea Party politics, you know. So it says a lot about the state of affairs of Republican Party than Trump himself, that an outsider made it to the top, you know, and none of the establishment's candidates made it there. And then Republican Party is like, they're surprised, or, you know, that how did Trump get there, you know? So it's just like, you reap what you sow. For so many years, you let the Tea Partiers and the extreme right of the right take over your party and dictate to you, made you sign agreements and oaths that you were not going to vote, you know, and all that stuff. And then this is the dumbing down of the Republican Party, and this is what you get. So I don't know what's going to happen to Republican Party, but it doesn't look good right now, you know.
No, I agree. However, I would say that having watched the DNC almost cave in on itself within the first day, with Debbie Wasserman Schultz stepping down after the email scandals and the delegates of Bernie walking out of the DNC and protesting in the streets by the thousands, which you didn't see very much of on media, that the movement of the Democratic Party to more left of center, to more centrist and middle of the road, if not right-leaning candidates such as Hillary Clinton, that there is also what seems to be a rift within the Democrats as well.
Yeah, there is a big rift between the Democrats, but I think the Democratic convention helped heal it a little bit, you know, because now Hillary's rating, you know, like in polls, 10 points ahead of Trump. And it was fair, you know. Debbie Wasserman Schultz did, you know, favor Hillary Clinton. And the thing was that when Hillary Clinton appointed her as the chair of her committee, that was not right. The day she resigns, I mean, she could have waited, or she didn't need to do that.
She was very obvious.
She was very obvious. And that just hurt the Bernie supporters even more, you know.
Why?
Because, you know, like, they felt cheated. although there wasn't real cheating, I'm not sure if there was any or not, but they felt like, okay, she has to kind of like give them like something that they can come over to her side or support her in the general elections. Rather, she was defiant, you know, this woman, you know, like she resigns because of those emails, and obviously she did something wrong. And then instantly you say, I don't care, you're defiant, and you make her the chair of your election campaign committee, you know.
But, you know, many of the Bernie supporters had been making similar types of claims and complaints all throughout the election process in different states, where people were turned away at the polls, where the polling machines didn't work, where they were told that they had to go to a different polling place, and all of these controversies that made the Bernie supporters feel like votes were being stolen during the primaries.
Yeah, and Bernie supporters are not traditional Democrats, you know. Most of them are independents. And there are new, you know, youngsters who have never been part of the democratic process, social-leaning socialists that Bernie brought into the folds of the Democratic Party. So you can't call them traditional Democrats, you know. Traditional Democrats do support Hillary Clinton. Bernie was an independent all his life, you know.
Do you think that the Democratic Party can survive without all of those independents and all of... because on the Republican side, you also have a lot of people that are going out of the Republican Party and saying, you know what, I mean, maybe I'm going to go independent now.
Yeah. I mean, the Bernie's success, you know, and Donald Trump's success, or the Bernie's movement, you know, that was a big movement. It just shows that people are disaffected with politics as usual, and there's a space for third party, I think, in America, you know, and now it's more obvious than ever before, because there's people who feel like the traditional Democratic Party and the traditional Republican Party don't represent them. You know, there's a big chunk of people who feel that none of them represent them. So Democrats, and especially people like Hillary Clinton, were more hawkish. And I was also disappointed, you know, quite a few times when Democrats were, you know, tripping over themselves to be more like Republicans during Bill Clinton's time, you know. And they were saying, oh, we are just like them. And they were more hawkish, and they were right of center. And Hillary Clinton's politics are also right of center. But Bernie Sanders made her a better candidate. You should, you know, we can give that to Bernie Sanders, that he made her a better candidate. It was because of his candidacy that she had to turn left. She realized what the public demands, and the public and the Democrats are left of center. They're not even center, you know. So they want, you know, some reform, you know, Hillary Clinton had to pivot to the left in order to appeal to the people. I hope she stays there. She's sticking there. For now, she's saying, you know, she's saying all the stuff that the progressives want her to say. And she's talking about college tuition and making it free for people earning less than certain amount of money. Is it 100 and something thousand dollars? I don't know the exact figure. So she's trying to appeal to the students and stuff, but I don't know. I mean, only time will tell. Her presidency will tell.
Well, when you were describing how the, you know, Democrats were trying to be more like the Republicans, I thought you were talking about Hillary at her own convention at the DNC, because, I mean, a lot of the moves that I saw them making, including the flag waving and all the patriotism talk and all of the veterans talking and all of the, you know, police lives matter talk along. I mean, it was almost like she was a Gemini. She didn't know. And then what I saw was her really trying to appeal to disaffected GOP voters with her choice for the VP, as well as with a lot of the rhetoric that went on in the convention. Do you think that was the right move for her?
Well, she's aiming towards the primaries are over, and she's a Democratic presidential candidate, and she's looking forward to the general elections where she has to be the president of the United States of America and not just the Democrats. So she has to appeal to the GOP disaffected voters, and that was a smart move on her part. You know, as a political candidate, you know, as a candidate for presidency, she has to appeal. She can't just, you know, she has the base. She has her own support, you know, the core support who will support her no matter what. But to win the general elections, she needs to get the support of the independents and the disaffected GOP voters to put her over the edge.
But, you know, one of the things I have noticed a lot, and I talked about this on other programs on this station, the reason why people hate Hillary so much. I mean, it's not a dislike. It's not a difference of opinion. They hate her. And they're talking about jail her and hang her and kill her. All these horrible things that were actually said by Trump supporters at different rallies and at his convention. So the question that I have, you know, I talked about, I believe, and this is my personal opinion, the reason why people treat Hillary like that is because there's a lot of sexism in this world. And it's harder for people to accept a woman in the top leadership position of this country. I don't know if you would agree with that, but...
No, I agree with that. You know, we are still fighting for abortion rights. They're trying to overturn Roe versus Wade, you know. So, I mean, it's not that the women's rights movement is over. And I mean, women do have rights, but still they're making less than the men, you know, of the same qualifications, you know, for the same job. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not, and like, I mean, people are making such a big deal that Hillary will be the first female president of the United States, and the United States is kind of like the world leader, and I'm amazed that there hasn't been a woman leader here, when in the rest of the world, they have been, even in Muslim countries, they have been women leaders of the nations, 9 women Muslim leaders, you know, they've ruled their nations. But for America, I'm just so surprised that there's that, there's that paradox that it's the greatest nation on the earth and very advanced, and, you know, but when it comes to women's rights...
You're much kinder. I would have called it hypocrisy, but paradox works well too.
Yeah, because, you know, like it's supposed to lead the world, you know, and but when it comes to women's rights, it now is the, you know, so many other countries have had female leaders, but it's a big deal that America might have one.
Right. And we don't have equal representation and never have had it in Congress or at the state and local levels. It's something that definitely needs to be worked on. So I've asked you why you think Hillary is doing well or poorly, but can you explain to me why Trump is doing so well, even with the hate speech, even with the rhetoric?
I just want to go back that, you know, you were saying that people at the convention were saying that hang her or...
Hang her, kill
her. Yeah,
I
know. There was speakers at the convention who said that, jail her, you know, main speakers who said that, worse things than that. Mm-hmm. That was shocking, you know. I mean, it was unbecoming of, you know, America or, you know, supposed to be educated people talking like that. Why is Trump candidacy so successful, you know? I feel like there has a group of people who have been voiceless for a long time. I don't want to say, I mean, who are tired of, not that it's right, but they're tired of the political correctness or felt like because of the civil rights movement, somehow they lost their rights, you know? So they are, you know, coming there and supporting Trump. And the more outrageous things he says, the more they love him. Because, you know, there is that group who feels like they've never been able to voice, you know, or feel like they're subjugated. It's just like people say, you know, like the White Lives Matter or the ones who are anti, what is it? I'm forgetting the name.
Anti-Black Lives.
No, I meant, you know, like you get, if you're a minority or something, you get admission into the university.
Oh, yes. Oh, now you made me forget it. Affirmative action.
Affirmative action. Yeah, they're anti-affirmative action. Right. And they feel like because of that, their rights have been taken away, you know. Mm-hmm. And so...
Is that really what they feel, or is that what they've been told to feel?
Oh, they've been told to feel. There's like the right-wing radio shows have been, you know, Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, and all those. They have been telling them. I mean, they have poisoned the minds. They have played a big role in the ascendancy of Trump candidacy. You know, whatever Trump says, people act like they're shocked. Mm-hmm. But this is all along what Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, you listen to Fox News, they've been saying all this all along what Trump says. You know, build a wall, deport Muslims, jail these people, you know, and White Lives Matter and affirmative action, you know, you don't need it. And so Trump is just saying it out loud and he doesn't care and he's not politically correct, you know.
Should we really be that surprised that Trump's ascendancy happened the way that it did when we have had a history, not just recently, but for decades and decades, of electing people into office like Governor Walker, like Jan Brewer in Arizona, like the sheriff that you saw speaking at the Sheriff Clark that was speaking at the RNC that was talking about Police Lives Matter and had people cheering that the police officers all got off, the ones that killed Freddie Gray, that we've had decades of politics in which both parties have used dog whistle, racialized rhetoric in order to get people to vote their fears and to put presidents in power. I mean, that's been going on for decades, literally.
Yeah, it's manipulation. You know, it's like they make, they're called the, also there's that, I'm mixing two things up, but there are the value voters, you know, who are made to vote against their interest because they throw religion in the mix, you know, and then they throw in a bit of this racism. I don't know, I mean, if I should use that word, but it does exist, you know.
It is, it's real.
It's not dead. I mean, just because, I mean, 1960s when the civil rights movement happened is very recent past. It's not that long ago if you look at the timeline of history. And that doesn't mean that, I mean, till recently when I started watching CNN and when I was new in America in 1996, there was not a single person of color, a newscaster or a, you know, what you call them, you know, the TV personalities,
right,
saying news. It's recently that they got Don Lemon, you know, and a few other black people there in the comedy shows, you know, like Jon Stewart, you know, he got the people of color. Mm-hmm. Before that, it was pretty, on news channels, it was pretty, you know, even in 96, there was not even a black or a person of color, you know, on the news channels.
No, and we didn't have so many channels to choose from.
Yeah.
And there hadn't been 24-hour news networks that were just devoted to trying to create profits off of selling news. And that, I think that changed the landscape. I think that the fact that Roger Ailes, whose ascendancy in Fox News helped create the environment for a political candidacy like Trump's, that he is now leaving that place in,
well,
shame.
It says, you look at their hypocrisy, you know, why is he leaving? You tell me.
Sexual harassment.
Yeah. And that's how Trump treats women, and that's how he sees them. He was sponsoring Miss America or Miss Universe, one of those pageants, you know, which is so degrading to women, I feel like, you know. Like, I mean, women's rights movement happened and it is so anti-feminist, you know, like women parading and being judged on their looks, and then they put in a little bit of a talent show, you know, to make it legit, you know.
But the GOP, this is something that I cannot understand, okay, because we just talked about voters and values, and we're going to have to talk about Melania and her nude photo spreads, and we're going to have to talk about Ivanka and the lawsuits against her for stealing a Colombian shoe designer's designs, and Trump and the corruption behind their families, and the fact that he's been married three times, that he has three different ex-wives and children from all those three different marriages. I don't understand how they make the connection between the values and that family's being the first family that represents those values in the GOP.
But he was not even a real practicing Christian, you know, and now all these Christians are supporting him who believe in the Christian values.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. And the other thing about her, Melania Trump, is the one thing is that even her degree, which they said she had an architectural degree, was fake. They took down her website because it stated that she had done a architecture, and that was a lie too.
Yeah, well, we have to go into that. We have to talk about how do they reconcile this? It sounds like they're... something happens in the person's brain to make them accept something like that. But we're going to go quickly to a musical break. And when we come back, we will talk about the Trump family.
I want to. Okay. It's interesting.
Right after this break.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is the Immigrant Heart Show, and we are talking today about a possible Trump presidency. It's very scary stuff. I have a special in-studio guest, Dr. Fauzia Haider. She's a board member with the Center for Interfaith Projects. And right before the break, we were talking about how does the GOP, which is these values voters, these religious right people that are all about the evangelical Christians. I mean, they wanted to vote for Ted Cruz, for Christ's sake. How do these voters accept Trump and his whole family? Somebody said, can you just imagine how they would have treated Hillary if she was introducing her children from three different fathers on and the DNC, or how they would have treated Obama introducing his children from three different marriages in politics?
Yeah, it's just that they have different set of standards of judging people, other people than themselves, you know. Trump was like, they call him a family man, you know, or like these are the family, and these are the Republicans believe in the values and the family and the sanctity of life and anti-abortion and all that, and believe in God, and that comes with honesty and truth, you know. And I believe that fornication is a sin, you know. So Trump was having affairs with Ivanka while he was still married to his other wife, you know, and he's had three wives and three children from three different wives. If it was a Democrat, I mean, I would love to see Fox News, you know, what they had to say if it was Hillary Clinton walking on the stage with.
I think they would have eviscerated her for that.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
They don't even cut her a break on her clothes. They don't cut her a break on the way she sounds.
One thing I'll tell you what the, I'm just kind of like going on a tangent.
Yes.
But Hillary Clinton, you know, one thing that the convention did for me was when they showed her, I didn't know how much service she had done, you know, how she had served. That made her, humanized her, Chelsea Clinton and a few other speakers, humanized her for me, you mm-hmm. know. Before, she looked like a cold, calculating politician, cutthroat, you know. Mm-hmm. But and the thing, her problem is that she can't connect to the people. She's not a people's person. Mm-hmm. You know, she's a good bureaucrat. Mm-hmm. You know, she'll get things done. But she doesn't know how to connect to the people. But it did humanize her for me.
I agree. She is a good bureaucrat. And I don't feel like she was humanized enough for me. When I was watching the DNC, I saw a parade of Black and Latino women whose stories were being used to cloak her in humanity and hope where none exists, because neither she, under the presidency with her husband, nor as Secretary of State under Obama, did anything to alleviate the suffering of undocumented immigrants and refugees coming into this country.
I agree with that part.
And
you know,
yet she used the stories of little Mexican girls terrified by the policies of President Obama that she not just followed but espoused. She talked about punishing little immigrant children that were crossing over the border and saying they needed to be put in detention, they needed to be punished so that it would send a message to anyone coming over. The Constitution says that cruel and unusual punishment is not constitutional, and the Supreme Court has determined that holding people in detention centers to send a message to other people that might come over the border is unconstitutional. And those are the words that came out of her mouth. So for her to use the terror and the fear that she and her policies and her Democratic president had been enforcing against 400,000 people a year on average ever since he came into his presidency, and even long before that, is a little hypocritical, because I think, you know, you created that fear and that terror in that little girl, and then your response to it is not, I promise, Obama tried to do this, I promise in my first 100 days in office, I will pass comprehensive immigration reform. Those words did not come out of her mouth. Future President Trump started his candidacy by saying, Mexicans are rapists and they're criminals and we're going to build a wall. You know, she didn't address that. That was, we have been, as Mexicans, we've been one of the biggest scapegoats of this campaign. Muslims too. And I felt it was imperative for there to be a strong support from the campaign and from the candidate for the Democrats for Muslims and Mexicans. And what I saw was her saying, just don't worry about it, kids. I'm going to be a better person.
This is what politics is about. You know, they use people. I mean, it's as props. You know, sometimes you would see a token woman wearing a headscarf right behind the speaker on the right-hand side or the left-hand side, and a black person and a Latino. You know, they try to make the picture look colorful mm-hmm. and inclusive. Mm-hmm. But that's what politics is about. And that's what they are. When she rules, we'll find out how, when she governs, we'll see how she do it, if she gets to do that. Mm-hmm. Going back to Christian values, I'm a little ADD, so I go right and left and go on tangents. But, you know, like Christian values, it's always hypocritical to me. If you watch Fox News, that is all about this too. They have the women, Hooters women, come on the show. I saw a video clip, you know, and you know, and there was like wrestling going on their stage on live TV, that Hooter girls and one of the presenters, you know, on the ground. I mean, how is that a Christian value? You know, women skimpily dressed coming and, you know, I mean, it's like degrading to women too, and it's not really Christian. And the other thing is that the more Christian and more conservative states have higher pregnancy rates. How does that compute, you know?
So, that makes a lot of sense to me. I'm sure it's to you too, as a doctor.
Yeah, I know,
too.
I know. It does. Because, you know, the life is valuable, you know, until it's in the womb. But once it's born, then they don't care for it, you mm-hmm. know. Then you take care of the child. The government should not pay for anything, you know, for these unwanted children. Mm-hmm. But they will protect the right of a unborn child. But, you know, once it's born, then it's a different story.
But I will say this about the DNC's speakers. Khizr Khan made an impact in what he said to Trump and the way that he spoke, the moral authority from which he was speaking, that affected Trump and his candidacy in a way that almost, I mean, they call him Teflon Don for a reason. It just, everything just slides off of him. You can call him out on all the things he does, and it doesn't seem to faze him no matter what he says. But for some reason, this really hit Americans in a different way. Why do you think that was?
Okay, first, the Trump thing about him being a Teflon Don, you know, people have very low expectations from him. That's the thing, you know, like they don't expect much from him, and they see this is who he is, you know, and so, you know, they hold him to a different standard because they don't expect anything better than him. And the Khizr Khan story is that, you know, by bringing him there and him speaking out, he was trying to address that bigotry of Trump against the Muslims, you know, like he makes it sound like there is a religious test for people to come to America. That's why Khizr Khan, you know, showed him that, have you read the Constitution? You know, that was the point he was trying to make, that any religion, people of all religion are Americans, and there's not an American test, you know, and they have even sacrificing their lives for their country because it's their country too. There's allegiance. Their allegiance is to America because they are Americans, not to Khomeini or somebody else somewhere else like Trump and some of the Republicans like to portray, you know. And he gave the ultimate sacrifice. His son gave his life for this country. And that's what it's all about, you know. And when Trump attacked he couldn't say, I mean, what I can say is that there's no decency in Trump. I mean, a president has to be dignified. You can't use that word from him. I mean, Trump is the opposite of dignified, you know. And when he, I mean, he could have just said that, oh, thank you for your service and, you know. But he couldn't help himself because he's like a teenager, high school teenager girl, I should say, you know, like the way they, you know, go back and forth, you know, or bicker. He's not presidential. He's not dignified. He's not decent. He doesn't have decency. And he attacked his wife, you know. First he said, oh, yeah. And then he says, but why was she quiet? Maybe she was not allowed to speak, meaning that Muslim women are not allowed to speak. That was another hit at Muslim people, you know, Muslims. And then he probably doesn't know much. I don't think he's very educated. I mean, because there have been 9 Muslim women presidents in 9 nations, you know, all over the world. Probably, you know, and then to say that she was mute and she was standing there, you know, and she didn't have anything to say to a gold star's mom, you know, and she was overwhelmed. You could see from her face that she was ready to cry. Her mouth was, you know, kind of like corners were turned down and she almost looked like she was holding herself. Mm-hmm. And she did say that she can't see her son's picture. If she sees it, she's overwhelmed by emotions. And yet he attacked her, you know, and that was a low. Even John McCain, you know, spoke out against that. John McCain, who supported Trump, which I don't know why he's supporting Trump, you know. And
it's hard to understand why many, I personally, I feel like it's political suicide to say that you support Trump. I think that whoever has done it has probably not seen it that way now. But I think in the future, you know, if he does happen to become president, I really do believe it will be like a Hitler. And I do believe that people will look back at this time and go and try to distance themselves however they can from their decisions to support him.
Trump presidency will be a disgrace to America. It will make America the laughing stock of the world. Like I said, he's not presidential. He has no decency. He's not got a decent bone. He's rude. He's obnoxious. He's like a spoiled brat child, you know, who just, you know, wants things his way, and he doesn't get them. He has a tantrum. He has tantrums, you know.
But you know something very interesting that we talked about the media and the way that they've influenced conversations, especially this Islamophobia. You remember when they had that literature insert in the Inforum many years back? I think it was around 2006.
Obama's election. Yeah. 2008. I got that.
And how the Fox News Network and many in the media have stuck to these narratives. I know from my experiences of going and speaking on different topics and other news shows, specifically some places where I feel they're very conservative leaning, like Valley News Live, where whenever we talked about anti-Muslim rhetoric, the first thing that would come out of people's mouths was, well, how do you feel about the way they treat women? How do you feel about the way that they kill or stone women for this and or force them to wear hijab? Or how do you feel about the way that they force women to get married and don't let them talk and don't let them drive and don't let them be all these things? It's a recurring theme.
It's because people here don't know Muslims. Not a lot of Americans haven't met any Muslim, you know. So when they hear a person in authority tell them what the Muslims are and define it for them, they believe it because they've never seen them. And the only Muslims they see in the news are who are agitating or blowing themselves up. And by the way, they are killing more Muslims than anybody else. And I'm a Muslim woman. I started driving when I was 14 years old. And there's plenty of women in my country who drive. We've had a woman prime minister twice, elected twice. We have a female speaker of the house. So I, in response to Trump saying that Ghazala Khan could not speak because she's a Muslim, I posted a Facebook post where I said for Donald Trump that posted the post about 9 female leaders of the Muslim world. And I said that not only can they speak, but they can bark orders too. you know. So what he does is they think they see a few countries, you know, where the women don't have any rights, and it's not Muslim country. Muslims are 1.6 billion people. But they, you know, defined Islam by how women are treated in just a few of the countries, like Saudi Arabia, you know, and those Arab nations. But Arabs make only 17% of the Muslim population. Most of the Muslims live in Asia. So, I mean, so for him to say, or anybody, or Fox News, you know, they pick one country. So they should not say Muslim. They should say in Saudi Arabia, or even in Somalia, women cover themselves up, but the women have equal rights. They drive, they socialize with men, they are not restricted or segregated. They just dress more modestly, but the women are active and they do jobs. The only country where I can think of is Saudi Arabia. You know, the women have to fight for their rights, and that's their cultural, traditional tribal society, Bedouin society, and they're still holding on to the culture. So when they say Muslim, they're describing just a certain group of people, not the whole. He doesn't know who Muslims are.
No, obviously not. And you know, and I've talked to a lot of Muslim women that for them, they make a decision whether or not they will wear the hijab. And it's a very long, soul-searching decision to make that decision.
There was a time, you know, when I was considering wearing it too, when I was in America, but I decided against it, you know, because, you know, the whole point is modesty, you know, and that's why some women wear it. And there are some problems, you know, in the Muslim world too, but you shouldn't make generalizations that all Muslim women are like that or majority are like that, you know. A lot of women wear it out of their choice, but there are women, you know, like in Afghanistan, who are being forced to cover themselves up and get killed if they don't cover up. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm not going to say all Muslims are like this, you know. Mm-hmm. So there are some issues to be addressed, but you can't generalize. I mean, there's been if there are 10 Muslim women leaders and you're going to elect your first one now, you know, I'm a Muslim woman. I'm here talking. Yeah. And I talk a lot.
And you're good at it. So let me ask you, because we only have a few minutes left, but I want to finalize our conversation with the question about a possible Trump presidency. Do you think it's going to happen? Is there anything that can save us? And if there is a Trump presidency, what do you think will happen, especially to Muslims and Mexicans and those people that he said he's going to target and remove from this country or void from this country?
I hope it never happens, and I have more faith in the American people, but if it does happen, it will be a huge embarrassment for America, and it will be a disgrace to elect such a person. You know, he has got fascist tendencies. He doesn't understand what democracy is, you know, or democratic values, and his own constitution. Probably he hasn't read it. He should read it, you know. And so many of the other Republicans, you know, they better go and open it up and read it too, you know, that there's no religious test. But Trump presidency would be really, really scary, you know, because he is volatile. That's how I can describe him, you know. I mean, there have been kings in the past, you know, but this is like, I mean, this was really scary because he gets offended over the slightest of thing. He takes everything personally. He is a pathological narcissist, you know. So, I mean, he believes in tit for tat. He can't think. He's not considerate. He doesn't have empathy. He doesn't have decency. I mean, to be a leader, to be a president, you have to be able to feel and understand other people's issues. That's how you can solve them, you know. He wants to rule. He wants the title. He himself said if he ever becomes a president, he will let his vice president do all the job. He just wants the title, you know. He'll just sit there as a king.
Is there anything that could stop this presidency? Is there anything that you see that people who are on the fence about this vote need to do if they want to stop a Trump presidency that they're not doing now?
I mean, there are people who are just, you know, like upset about Bernie Sanders supporters. You know, they're upset. They would rather, you know, have him as a president or Hillary. I mean, the choice is pretty obvious. I supported Bernie Sanders. I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter. But Trump...
And you're not going to vote third party? Jill Stein?
No, that's Gary a Johnson? Waste. Because, I mean, I heard about Jill Stein views on vaccines and stuff, you know. So.
And you're a doctor.
Yeah, and I'm a doctor. So, I mean, third party would be a waste right now if you want to waste your vote. But I would say go and vote for Hillary Clinton. She's an experienced person, you know. She has been in the government. She knows how the system works. She's educated. And no matter what, she's much, much better than Donald Trump. He has no idea. You know, I think he has no clue what running a country is all about. He just wants the title, you know. Like he said himself, if he becomes president, he'll let the vice president do the job and he'll just sit there.
Well, you've heard it here, folks, from Dr. Fauzia Haider, and it's been wonderful having you on the show. You've been listening to An Immigrant Heart Show here on KPPPLPFM 88.1 Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Amal, no, I'm a pirate. ਵੰਗਾਂ ਚੜਾ ਲੋ ਕੁੜੀਆਂ ਉਹ ਵੰਗਾਂ ਚੜਾ ਲੋ ਕੁੜੀਆਂ ਉਹ ਵੰਗਾਂ